musician Chris Butler, the mad genius behind Tin Huey, The Waitresses, and other cool things.
What's your mind? Keep your mind on your work. Work, 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 work.
Today's show is brought to you by Digital Lifestyle Outfitters. For all of your iPod accessories, go to DLO.com. Back with Chris Butler.
Hey,
Chris, there's so many bands we forgot to name check.
All right, Chai Pig, who are back playing Akron, Two Girls and a Guy.
I thought they were like, you know, you talk about bands like PJ Harvey and Cat Power.
Yeah.
I mean, they,
yeah.
You know, their
very
songs
close.
Still hold.
Yep, they do. In fact, they have a wonderful release of something they did way back in the day that never got released called the Miami Tapes.
And it's on CD Baby.
It's CD Baby.
Yeah.
Yep. Hammer Damage. Every once in a while, in fact, they're playing July 28th in Akron, Lime Spider. They get together every once in a while. Still just great
band. Is Mikey living in Atlanta?
He is, but he flies up.
I might have to come in for that show.
Amazing drummer.
Yeah.
Amazing drummer.
Really good.
Yep. Good musicians, you know, in Ohio. Yeah, nothing
else
to do.
Unit 5. Rubber City Rebels. Tracy's husband owns the cool record store.
Cool record store in town. They get together and play. They play with Augie Teagle and Bob Ethington, who is now, after my 30 years or whatever, being the new boy in Tin Huey, now he's the new boy in Tin Huey.
So he is?
He gets to move all the gear. He's been playing percussion.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So Bob Ethington is, you know, he's got to get me a beer.
Well, how about we forget about... nice.
Instead of me getting everybody right. else.
You get the beer.
Yeah.
Marty Jones, who moved back to Canton.
Yep. I
couple
just saw
years
her. She
ago.
Played with
Color Me Gone.
Yep, Color Me Gone, and George Cabanis. And
George was a guitarist in Hammer
brilliant,
Damage.
Brilliant guitarist. They have something with Chuck Keith from the Hi-Fis and Rich Roberts from Chai Pig.
Is Rich still playing drums with Chai Pig?
Yep.
Wow.
Yep. So it's, you know, usually what happens when you're an old fart musician, you're 20 years, you decided you shouldn't be doing this anymore, and you go off and you start family and get a job and whatever, and then eventually it just continues to gnaw at you, and you go, what the hell, you know, I'm gonna play, I want to play, I miss playing, and so you either reform or you play with other people, and much to everyone's surprise, you're usually 10 times better than you were even back then.
Because you can actually play now.
Yeah. Right. Now that it doesn't matter, you can actually, you know, and that's the point. It doesn't matter, so what the heck, let's just do it for fun.
And you're loose.
Let's have fun,
yeah.
You're loose, you don't care. There's nothing writing on it. There's no like, you know, Jerry Wexler is not going to come down to the Lime Spider and sign you up and make you a star and or whatever. So you could do it for the right reason, which is for fun.
And the art.
And the art. And people are still writing songs, and they're as good as ever, and, you know, what the hell.
You know, getting back to the Numbers Band, something that's extraordinary about that experience is you go to a gig, you go out to the Outpost
yep.
and see them play, and you'll see the same people that you saw at JB's
yep.
in 1973
that's
or
right.
74.
That's right.
Dancing,
loyalty,
enjoying themselves.
Having a great time.
And, you know, and I don't know, it's just, it's the communal nature of great music.
And communal nature of great music, timeliness of it, timeliness of the experience. You know, maybe, yeah, okay, you know, okay, we want to get our, you know, capture our lost youth, blah, blah, blah. You know what? Yeah.
But so what? You know, the blues musicians
stuff,
play
know.
Until they die.
That's
the
right.
jazz
That's
musicians
right.
the play
Stones
until they die. The bluegrass guys play until
right,
they die.
Right, right. Why not
We've
rock
now
and
allowed rock and roll music to grow up with the generation.
Yep. Yep, you know, and I didn't think that, you know, yeah, you go through 10, 15 years of going, I'm too old to do this, you know, and then you just say, well, one day the hell with it, you know, I'm going to do it because it's fun and I want to do it, so, and then you get back on the bicycle and it doesn't hurt and it's does no harm and you on a good night you can have a lot of fun, so
yeah. Now, you know,
the reason you migrated here to the studio today.
Yeah.
Well, I always wanted to interview you anyway, but
well, thanks.
You sent me this amazing. I don't know. It's like the life of Chris Butler through the song "Do Ya" by The Move.
By The Move. Now, a lot of people know the song "Do Ya." Now it's in a commercial, but it's the ELO version. The continuity is a guy named
Well, actually, it wasn't
Jeff
really Lee. The Move, because The Move had just split up. And they tacked that song onto a Move
oh,
record.
Really? Oh, really?
Yeah. You know that?
No.
It was like the transition period between The Move and ELO.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
So they re-released what
The Move being Roy Wood's baby, and then, with Jeff Lynne.
Who became ELO.
And then, they had a side project called Electric Light Orchestra.
Right.
Where they wanted to combine classical music, because Roy Wood, you know, was a very... very classically trained musician, and so his arrangements were very had a lot of classical chord changes and things like that. And they did this what the hell, let's bring some strings in, and they did a song. The Move had, well, credit to The Move, is this incredibly dumbass song that obviously Jeff Lynne did not have any lyrics for, because he made them all up, and then had this great chorus called "Ah, but I've never seen nothing like you." and he just did all these, you know, these kind of non sequitur lyrics, and it's obviously the last thing that was recorded, and they were either tired or too high or whatever, because it's sloppy and things don't kind of work together, and the mighty Bev Bevan is on there, who is a great drummer, but it's double track drums, but they're out of sync, and you know, the guitars are kind of clammy, and again he didn't have any lyrics, and it's just this great stupid, great dumb rock and roll song, and I've always been a fan of it, but I would always find myself answering back to the lyric, because his lines start with I've seen this and I've seen that and I've seen this and I've seen that, but I've never seen nothing like you. And so I began to answer, well, I've seen da 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 da, and I began to do these autobiographical little writings, little sketches. Well, I've seen
it's
this.
The history of you.
Kind of. It's a
Through
chunk
this
of
song.
It.
Yeah.
It's a chunk of it.
Or your early history.
Early history. Yeah. Or whatever. I know, whatever. And one, you know, what it was like being in high school and being in a rock and roll band and stuff I saw around the world. So I began to record these little bits thinking, oh, maybe I'll, you know, send it into This American Life or whatever. But I needed a way of organizing it. And I realized what I was doing was answering the Do Ya song and deconstructing the Do Ya song. And so I intercut chunks of the Do Ya song with my own little ramblings and came up with this 20-minute, I don't know what the hell it is. I call it an exploded song, just because I riff off the song. And for some of the longer stories, I took the chord progression, which is D, A, and G, and did a new backing track based on those chords. So I had some, like, you know, music bed that was different than the Moves version, and then weave it back in, then come back to the Move, and it was great fun to do, and it was a great way of learning Pro Tools and how do you edit and how do you record, you know. It's always better to learn on a project rather than learning out of a book. Well, of course you read the manual or TFM, but it's always better to be trying to have some kind of vehicle to learn on, and I use this to learn Pro Tools. So,
well, I'm happy it found its way to me, because it's great. And
my
pleasure. So without further ado,
The Do Ya Project.
The Do Ya Project by Chris Butler.
There are rock songs, and then there are dumb rock songs, and then there are really, really dumb rock songs. But the greatest really, really dumb rock song ever recorded has got to be The Move's original version of Do Ya. Written by the taste challenge Jeff Lynne, it's one big duh. Huge slabs of basic book one guitar chords, mandatory cowbell, inane lyrics, glaring guitar mistakes, double track drums that slip out of sync, a middle eight cribbed from a completely different song, and non sequitur ad libs that even massive doses of drugs can't excuse. And all coming from The Move, one of the most musically erudite and skilled combos of the 60s British invasion era. In short, it's brilliant. And so hopefully in its spirit, I bring you The Do Ya Project.
Okay, well, I've seen a 10-mile gash in the Earth's crust in Iceland. It was a festering wound, all blood red and yellow, pus, lava, really horrible, flesh earth. Painful to see, but you couldn't look away. We had to leave, though, because a sandstorm blew in off the glacier and blotted out the midnight sun. Well, I've seen Muhammad Ali. I was a token white boy in an all-black soul band, and we were asked to play at, get this, the Black Muslim Mosque number 12 in Cleveland. I am the devil in their theology, and I was not made to feel welcome. But up walks Muhammad Ali, chuckling, shaking his head, and says, "Now this boy's got guts." Then he shakes my hand, or rather he wraps his hand around mine like a cave-in. It was an avalanche of calluses and scar tissue. Then he spies the PA mixing board and yells, "Is that a radio? I want to be on the radio," and walks off. I can still feel that man's grip. I see old man crying at their own graveside. I've seen pigs out sitting a bunch of picture slides. But I never see nothing like what I saw in Hamburg, Germany in 1985. I was stranded between trains with not enough time to slide over to the Reeperbahn and gawk at the horrors or even to grab a bite to eat, so I just walked around. I turned one particular corner and stumbled upon a big taxidermist shop, and in the display windows were hundreds of stuffed animals. Only each animal was, in fact, a combination of animals. There was a duck with a lizard's head, a squirrel with duck feet, birds with fur, and weasels with feathers, and so on through every possible critterly permutation. And all were posed picnicking in a mock Wagnerian forest scene. Behold the ingenuity of man, I thought. Although it wasn't the sight of these recombinant animals that has stayed with me. That was some bent Germanic attempt at black humor. But the brilliance here was that we, unique among all of Earth's creatures, have the ability to slap some goo between two things and miraculously make one new thing. It's glue that truly sets us apart from the squiggling, squirming biomass that surrounds us. It's glue that has enabled us to make everything from pencils and pyramids to envelopes and rocket ships. I am aware of some animals that use adhesives to stick their houses together or cling to slippery rocks, but I ask you, does a spittle-billed termite mound look cozy? Or have you ever seen a barnacle playing Scrabble? And the social anthropologists, they're all wrong. Forget about tool making. Even a monkey will use a stick to bust up a beehive to get it some honey. And forget about fire. According to Greek mythology, Prometheus got into a hell of a pickle by stealing a flame or two from the gods and slipping them to us. Now, I'll grant you that fire did give us an edge on other species. But this glue idea is something we came up with ourselves. And this ability to reorder the shape and structure of our world is truly a skill normally reserved for gods and the forces of nature. If we, in our infinite wisdom, survey our surroundings and see that something isn't right, that two things that don't go together should go together, if we want a weasel with feathers, well, we and we alone on this planet have the power to make it so. Echo Homo Gluteum. Yes, I've seen wonders. Yes, I've seen criminals, but I never see nothing like you.
Hey!
I saw Dave Hamilton drop his hair. In 1965, high school was class war. The collegiates, rich, preppy, and college-bound versus the greasers, who, like me, were lower-class, third-generation immigrant kids new to the suburbs, deflected onto the vocational track and destined for trade schools, auto body shops, or, if we were lucky, the Army. And Dave Hamilton was our leader, the king rack, the top, full steam ahead hood. But no mere thug he. Dave was a continental greaser, an elegant breed that favored neon mohair sweaters worn over crisp, white, button-down shirts, slit-pocketed, cuffless gray gabardine trousers with a small belt on the butt back, Banlon socks, Stacy Adam lace-ups, or anything with Cuban heels. Mandatory accessories included a large pink rat tail comb in the rear pocket, a silver ID bracelet, and always, always a black leather car coat. Note that that's Hamilton, not Hamiltono or Hamiltoni. We had the vowels. He had the Irish redhead pompadour, and it crowned him so gorgeously that we dark, stumpy Italians could never come within a vet's length of this much class. And that hair was everywhere. In the boy's John, glowing in the center of a puff of camel smoke. In the window of the principal's office where Dave was once again sent for some surly infraction. And out in the school parking lot, bopping to the Four Seasons latest as he held court after detention. Cursed with a high, squeaky voice, his leadership style was silent and passive. He just did. He just was. And through his total resistance to any kind of authority and non-compliance with their rules, we got our cues as to how he was parsing the world into cool and not cool. Both the collegiates and the greasers had their pet bands. I played drums with the Disciples, and since we had a bekonked black lead singer with a Harley, and Buddy DeBug Vincent on sax, we played all the greasers' parties, bike runs, car club rallies, and funerals. Great gigs, lots of beer, and slutty Catholic girls who were keen on all kinds of rebellion, and nobody seemed to mind getting their James Brown or Link Ray through our homemade speaker cabinets. The collegiates band was the rebel kind. They played strictly British Invasion through rich parents, signed for store-bought Vox and Sun amps, and got their stage clothes on Carnaby Street via weekend trips to London. They were Jagger skinny and Daltrey pretty, and we kicked their asses on a fairly regular basis. It didn't matter. Their haughty, fabulous girls remained unimpressed. And there was no crossover contact that I can recall except once when at a battle of the bands, Kathy Worthington tripped over a speaker cable and I caught her by the tits. Hamilton, of course, considered this whole long-haired thing to be a big pile of pussy shit. Never mind that mop-top culture was becoming huge, it was a threat to everything manly, blue-collar, and elvish. It had bumped surf music off the radio. It had enabled our high school's lowliest squid to acquire some status by merely donning a polka dot shirt. And our parents thought the Beatles were cute. Cute. This was a disaster. The established teenage hierarchy was crumbling, and the noble greaser was rapidly becoming an anachronism. Then one day, Dave Hamilton showed up at school with his hair combed down. His clothes, his shoes, the chip on his shoulder, everything else about him was exactly the same. But this shocking apparent capitulation to the new pop culture brought lunch trays crashing to the cafeteria floor and teachers to lose their places in their lesson plans. And brought even more heat down upon him. Suddenly, Hamilton's hair was the most important thing in the world. This was not submission, after all. It was subversion. In one brilliant move, he had co-opted a threatening cultural trope and redefined it as his symbol of rebellion. He was immediately suspended, the high school banned long hair, and one ex-Marine gym teacher with a buzz cut started patrolling the halls with scissors and going after any boy whose ears he couldn't see. Both collegiates and greasers who'd let their hair grow dropped out to attend Griswold Academy, a trade school in downtown Cleveland that didn't have a dress code. One family even sued the school. They were Quakers, and to them, long hair on their children had religious significance. Dave peaked early, I guess. I saw him a few years later after he'd fallen asleep, drunk and drugged, and had burned off one of his arms to the elbow. He'd been working for several years in a car scrapyard near downtown, then met and married a girl named Ellie and had moved to a house trailer in a one-intersection village halfway to Youngstown. Dave liked the isolation and lived for the local fishing, but Ellie couldn't stand it, so they split and she moved to Florida. His parents got divorced when his father declared himself gay. Dave still had all his red hair, though. Yes, I've seen geniuses. Yes, I've seen wonders. I've seen marvels. But... I saw heroin roll through my lily-white country suburban neighborhood, house by house. Oh, Freddie, my crazy cousin, lover of so many women, for 4 years you kept a full-time job, went to college at night, and had a $100 a day dope habit. Jeez, what courage. Now that was a man, till his folks came back from vacation and found him hanging in the basement. She laid her down to rest in the morning sun. I saw Vicky Singleton come. She was the most sexual woman I've ever known. One time we were hanging out in her backyard, hot sun, hot day. She said, "Hey, want to see something?" I said, "Sure." She took off her jeans, lay back on a lounge chair, turned toward the sun, and spread her legs. In a few minutes, she came hard. "The sun fucked me," she said. They come around just to get a look, just to feel, to touch her long. I saw myself sick for 11 years over a priestess. She was everyone's art babe muse. Oh, I was so in love. 20 years later, I hooked back up with the guy who married her. My best friend, of course. Called him up. I was so nervous. "Why?" She snarled into the phone. "It's Chris Butler." Pause. No response. "Is Steven there?" "Steven!" she shrieked and drops the receiver. Nothing. Not a word to me. And I got shock treatments because of this cunt. They don't give a damn. What? Well, I saw a beach with pink sand that was so soft that you'd sink in up to your shins. But I also saw my brother-in-law smashed on magic mushrooms think about taking a swan dive off a cliff onto the jagged coral. Don't worry, he said, the rocks are my friends. And this was after I'd spent the entire day snorkeling and playing tag with a parrotfish that was, I think, in a pretty good mood. Can fish be happy? Can a fish have a sense of humor? And I saw a Jehovah's Witness blow his chance at the rapture by selling me a used car and lying about its condition. Who better to trust than a JW, I thought. He said his job was translating the Watchtower into German. Yep, lots of good miles left in that car. Lots of good miles. And I saw the club I was playing in burn down in the middle of a song. My band had just replaced all their gear after everything was lost in another fire barely a month before in the club next door. Not again, we said, and grabbed gear and cables as the flames came up through the floor. The harp player just made it out with my bass amp as the building crashed down around him. We hauled everything up three flights of stairs to an apartment across the street, but sparks landed on the roof and soon that building was on fire too, so we dragged everything back down the rear fire escape to a music store. We stayed up all night soldering stuff back together, found another club by noon the following day, built a stage that afternoon, and played that night with our shoes sticking to the wet paint. We won. Now that was courage. I saw the lighthouse and Antibes Harbor from the balcony of a little house in a medieval village up in Les Alpes-Maritimes and smelled the Mistral fat and moist with thyme from the Rhone Valley and pine from the Schwarzwald and thought, it doesn't get any better than this. And I saw a rainy moonrise while standing in the doorway of a warehouse in Newhavn, Copenhagen. I was with my wife and two great friends and have never felt closer to anyone else ever. And I thought, it doesn't get any better than this. It doesn't get any better than this. No, it doesn't get any better than this. Bother you with your history of schlock? I saw the move before you joined and dumbed them down, before you stole Roy Wood's idea for ELO and turned it into an arena-sized audio turd, and your production style is cringe-worthy. And I bet you don't feel guilty about any of this, do ya?
Chris, so...
Sorry, I apologize.
No, don't apologize. It's incredible. It's incredible. And, you know, I hope that we get a lot of great feedback and comments. And if people want to email you direct, who should they email?
I would say go to my website, futurefossilmusic.com, or you can email me through my blog, which is jammedonon, that's J-A-M-M-E-D, period O-N, period O-N, at Blogspot. Or you can go to the Tin Huey site. There's a link on there too. Lots of email. Beeswax2@AOL.com.
Beeswax. Spelled beeswax.
Beeswax. BEEZWAX2. And that's the numeral 2, no space. It's
at AOL.com.
At AOL.com. It's usually disastrous to, one, give out your email address, or two, continue to be on AOL. But I've given it out so much, I guess I'm stuck. So,
what are you going to do?
I try and write everybody back.
Somebody may want you to do this live. You realize that.
Oh, my God.
Could you do it? Could you recreate it live?
Yeah. Yeah, I was thinking about that. Yeah. I think it'd be great fun.
I think it would be an incredible performance art thing at like PS122 or some festivals.
I'd do it. I'm thinking of doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you're listening out there, if any of you curators who have who have the vision, call Mr. Butler,
please.
Email Mr. Butler,
please.
Rather.
I'm in the Hoboken phone book.
The Hoboken phone book, yes. And for all you fledging young bands,
Yes.
He's available for a producer's fee. Yeah. Are you doing any production right now? Are you producing any artists?
Oh, I'm working with this unbelievably cranky artist named Chris Butler, who just takes up all my time, and he's such a pain. It's so hard to work with. Not really. Kibitzing. I have a lot of friends who are making records, and thankfully they value
your
input, whatever, and they play me stuff, and I, criticize. And usually they do often do exactly what they want to do anyway, which is fine, is the way it should be.
Right. Is that that Butler? What the hell is he talking about?
Yeah, right. But, yeah, what? He's so yesterday.
Come on, man. Well, anyway, no, Chris, it was great. I can't wait to tackle part two of this interview.
Thank you, Dusty.
And that will be more on the history of Akron when you got into the bands at Kent, Ohio, and then migrated to New York City, and then found fame and fortune, and now have
some... Doing okay.
Yeah, you're doing okay, man.
I'm doing all right. I'm still vertical.
All right. We'll look for you in part two, and thanks for being on the show.
My pleasure, sir.
Thanks.
Blue collar, top dollar, 3 weeks pay, union shop, end of this, that don't stop. Ain't this the life? Sliding right to Wednesday. It's all downhill from here to weekends in my lazy boy. But far fried chicken and beer, yes, I need this job I'm doing. I need these bolt and screw. I stick it out through double shifts, all three they'd ask me to. I gotta work, 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 work. Never mind what you mind, keep your mind in your work. Work, 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 work. Coffee break. Your mind, keep your mind in your word.
Work, 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 work.
Checking the specs and cashing my checks.
Work, 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 work.
Idle hands, the devil's playground.
Work, 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 work.
I'd like to thank today's sponsors, Digital Lifestyle Outfitters, DLO.com. You got an iPod? You need accessories. DLO.com. And our friends, WebHSP, for all of your web hosting needs, it's webhsp.com. And finally, Frank and the guys at finaldraft.com. If you're writing a script, you're going to need Final Draft. This is Dusty Wright for the Culture Catch. We'll see you soon. Remember, we're influencing the influencers, one user at a time. Converge.